first of all, music is being used in the environment in a way that doesn't have any aesthetic implications either, in the sense that it's not for aesthetic beautification, it's to control people and entertain people and to get them out of the store quickly and to buy their purchases in the right kind of way and to keep them happy when they have to wait and to mask the background noise. And it has functional purposes. And we may find that aesthetically distasteful, but aesthetic criteria are not being used in the acoustic environment. And even music which is regarded as beautiful can lose all aesthetic meaning when it is used indiscriminately.
Isn't it astonishing how that functional use of music or commercial use of music actually works on the human race?
Yes, it's surprising, yes.
It's really quite phenomenal.
That's right. Largely because it works on us at a very involuntary level. In other words, it works on us whether we have aesthetic judgments about it or not. And so you can feel offended by it, but you'll still be affected by it. I'm not sure it's very often brought into the question of music and technology is that everyone has a relationship, in my opinion, to technology and is affected by it. And even if we just take the musical questions and leave out the rest of the social implications of technology, is that everyone's perception of music and relationship to music is very much influenced by technology already. You almost have to start from this point of view. The majority of music that people hear, first of all, is electroacoustically reproduced. That alone changes your whole relationship to music. And secondly, besides its being everywhere, it is now also a commodity. It's bought, sold, engineered, and consumed in a way that we've never experienced before. And these two central facts that I think must be obvious to anyone who simply experiences one day of their life and listens to how much music they consume or listen to or are exposed to. Conditions, first of all, are our perceptions, conditions our environment, conditions our attitude towards music and music making and music as entertainment. It is a multi-million dollar industry, in fact a $1 billion industry if you take the whole pop market into account. And a composer nowadays can hardly ignore these very serious implications.
It's amazing how many composers do.
Yes, but that's also the way they're taught. One of the sorriest examples of that is, to me, is that a significant number of high school teachers that are teaching music are having to retire early now because of hearing loss. The people that we are training to train our children to be more sensitive to sound are having exactly the opposite effect. They're becoming less sensitive to sound. In fact, there is actually physical hearing danger.
Well, those are the negative aspects of the technological
yes.
age, and,
yes.
and hopefully they will change in due course. What is your feeling?
Well, I emphasize the negative aspects not because I want to be a doomsayer, but because I feel that, first of all, it's obvious that I'm very, very involved with technology and sound and music. I'm pointing out these aspects of the music business and of the acoustic environment because I feel we have to understand those implications and we have to take some responsibility for them. Then once I have done that, and I hope it's not just to soothe my conscience, although obviously that's part of it, then I feel that somehow my relationship to the technology is already clarified and that I know what it can do on the negative side, but for every negative implication, I feel that there's also a positive implication. And once you start seeing the negative ones, well, then you also start looking for the positive ones. And I would rather emphasize all the positive ones, but unfortunately there seems to be such a lack of awareness of the implications of technology in society, and from the point of view of sound and music, particularly from musicians and among musicians, that somehow I feel that I have to keep saying and pointing out some of these other aspects.
I find it difficult to understand How, in days where our pop music culture is highly dependent on technology, that the young people would not be aware of it, and that you would have to continue to point it out because it is the young people who are making these high decibel tunes, etc.
I'm not saying they're unaware of it. I think they're unaware of the implications of it, but they certainly are unaware of it in the same way we're unaware of the air we breathe. They take music and technology for granted. I find they're very receptive to it in the courses that I teach, and they also recognize very quickly that they are already very involved with music and technology.
Let's go back a little bit to Utrecht and following your experience in Stockholm, which led you to pursue your work in the field of computer music, and I know that you've written some computer programs which were in operation there, presumably still are, and which are in operation at Simon Fraser.
Yes.
Can you explain in another way what these programs are intending?
Let me describe a few characteristics of the programs in a non-technical way, because in fact, you don't have to know very much about technology to use them. First of all, they use the technology that we have to create a rather unique learning situation. In fact, a very powerful learning situation. The technical term is interactive, but that simply means that there is a two-way communication going. In other words, you may type something in, but the typewriter types something back at you as well, or you get the sound back, which is another kind of information exchange or feedback. In other words, you have a situation where you learn by doing. Piaget described it as to learn about an object is to act upon it. Not to measure it, that's a traditional scientific approach, but to act on it, to get to know it by doing it, by working with it. And I think there's fairly strong evidence that children learn a lot of things this way. And I think we see in educational terms a change from merely rote learning or memorization or facts to how to do things, how to find information, how to solve problems, not dates, numbers, terms, and this sort of thing. Now, apply that to sound, and not only to sound in the sense that electronic music does create the sound as well as a structure, but also to composition. And maybe you get what I think is still the strongest aspect of a computer music situation that's not always exploited, by the way, but it has this tremendous power of being a very powerful learning situation where you are very precisely controlling the sound material or the structure. You are getting a feedback of your ideas very quickly. In other words, it acts as a very intelligent assistant from which you learn.
Was that your initial intention, though?
No. There are implications of this that you simply don't realize when you start. You start because of some vague feeling that either maybe it will be interesting, you have a curiosity about it. There's any number of reasons why you get into it. But it's become, in practice, it has become so powerful and has changed my whole approach to music and to composition so strongly that, and also being rather intellectually and academically inclined, I go back and say, well, why? Why did it do this? What is it about this process that I sort of stumbled onto or just evolved because it was obviously going in the right direction? It was producing good results, so I was following it and watching it develop. Then I stand back and say, well, why did it do it? And then this is one result, a good learning environment.
Now you started to talk about the characteristics of your program briefly.
I think that's definitely the first one. Another one that is more specialized and is probably more important to composers is the notion of using the computer to control architecture or structure. With the computer, you are able to construct or work with structure, with form, with large-scale development. All of these things can be implemented on the machine. It's a very powerful tool that I find that more and more is, for me, is very attractive. First of all, to some extent, it's the sound or the novelty of it that is attractive. In other words, rather a surface level. But after a while, you start thinking along these terms. You start thinking in a way that is more systematic, certainly I am thinking in a more systematic way and composing in a more systematic way. And it's because the computer allows me to control certain things, so therefore I can start composing in that way. And it's a direction that is not achievable in any other way. Afterwards, you look back and say, well, why does this happen? And then one conclusion that I've come to is that the computer allows you to represent knowledge in a way that is very, very different from what we ever had before. It represents a certain knowledge of how to do things. And that knowledge is externalized. And no longer is it just in my head, but now it's also in a machine. And as soon as you have a situation where part of the knowledge is in the user and part of the knowledge is in the machine, and those two are interacting, first of all, it's a very exciting process. It's like the difference between playing with an intelligent chess partner and pulling an automat and getting a chocolate bar out, right? You don't have much respect for that machine, that's why you kick it. But you don't kick a chess partner because they have some intelligence there, right? And so you learn, you know, what's a good strategy for learning how to play chess? Well, playing against a good partner. Because you learn by your mistakes. But you're learning with problems that you've set up yourself. And so ultimately, you're learning about yourself. There is a very positive aspect of it. You also are encouraged to think and to create musical structures that could not have been created in any other way, that are very new ways of thinking. Really, the only importance that the computer had was that it affected process. The process of composing was now irrevocably changed.
Will that spin off into instrumental composition as well, eventually?
Oh, yes, for sure. For instance, Ligeti has been very vocal and very articulate about, first of all, in the 50s when he worked in the electronic music studio, and then he went back to instrumental composition, and he describes very clearly how his thinking was totally changed. And, of course, you can hear the music that came out after that is really only conceivable after the electronic music experience. And now that he's getting back involved with computers, I think it's for the same kind of way that is going to start affecting the process, and I think he senses that very strongly.
Barry, do other composers who use the computer share your feeling about changing the process of composition?
I don't know whether they share it or not. I find that I get a lot of support and a lot of agreement just on a personal level from composers. They are very interested in this and they sense that somehow this is true. I don't want to say that somehow I'm privy to some great truth that no one's discovered or anything like that. What I think the situation is slightly different. I think that most composers who have got involved with technology have simply, and most technologists that have got involved with music, which is of course the other side of it, they simply are so concerned about technical problems that they've never stood back and really looked at it in a slightly more objective way. You're just so caught up in it. There's so many details. There's so much that involves you that it's only later that you, if you have the moment to reflect on what's happened, that I think then you'll start asking these questions. This is all very much after-the-fact reflection.
Isn't that one of the pitfalls of working in the field of computer music, though?
Yes, indeed. It's an incredible pitfall that a lot of people simply never get out of. And the technologists often don't make it any easier for them. Often they are making it more difficult for them, unwittingly perhaps, but still. There are many unfortunate barriers facing the composer. Partly it's the composer's training. They've not really been trained to take advantage of the technology, to understand it. They've usually not been trained in anything in terms of acoustics or psychoacoustics, which is really the only universal language that you can talk to technologists about or that computer programs can operate on. It really has to be an acoustic representation of music. And that has not been part of composers' training. They're not used to expressing their compositional ideas in terms of anything that a machine could use. And, of course, the same thing goes for the technologists. They have no idea of what really is important musically. And yet they've been trained to think that their answers are the best answers. As soon as a computer programmer tells you that this is the most efficient way to do it, And he has a god called efficiency and another god called elegance and another god called cost-effective demands. And no one's going to convince him that that those may not be ultimate reasons for doing what he wants to do. And the composer often doesn't have enough self-confidence to say, I don't believe you, or I think it should be done another way.
But that gap will become less in time, obviously.
Yes. I think the composers, frankly, are hopefully making bigger strides than the technologists are. I see a lot of signs that composers, particularly younger ones now, are looking and really prepared to go to work and learn a lot of things that they normally haven't learned before. The technologists, I don't feel, are really becoming that sensitive yet to the arts. There's a few lovely exceptions, marvelous exceptions, and I'm very pleased to be working with some of those people. But somehow the scientific training and the is generally not going in that direction. Maybe one exception might be that there is a bit more consciousness among computer science teachers that there is a social responsibility in the use of their craft. What you see is that the computer science people that are very bright, but they get almost trapped by their own brilliance in a way, that their ego gets involved in it, that now they can do this and they have this power to program these machines. And then once they graduate, they get picked up by the best corporations that can pay the highest jobs, the highest wages, and very few of them ever stop to think about the implications. Again, the technology is controlled by forces that are not musical. I mean, that's obvious. It's economic forces.
Well, there's another factor, too, don't you think, that the generation that runs the music business and therefore is privy to the way in which to get subsidy to support their particular projects are not particularly the people who are now in their late 20s and early 30s who are developing this field. That is another economic consideration. It strikes me that it'll take another couple of generations to change that attitude. When the young people suddenly get into their 40s and 50s and start controlling the music business, as it were.
Well, I certainly wouldn't be overly optimistic. Yes, I think there is a gradual change that happens. Whether it can offset the tremendous change in technology and its availability, because also remember now that the technology is also affecting the home market as well as the professional market. There is so much money involved that a young person who's being trained into this field often gets the illusion, just as the home computer buyer gets the illusion, that suddenly he has a control over something. And I think, I'm afraid it is somewhat of an illusion, because it is not really that much more control than the viewer of television has on switching channels. It's going to be quite a while before there's really any fundamental change. One hope is that more people will become familiar with technology and not be essentially bamboozled by it. And I hope that composers are going to be in that category. I spend more time trying to work with composers and get their ideas back and interact with composers, because a lot of composers can use the kind of programs that I've developed, and I feel it's more important to that they understand the situation and get access to machines easily and get the kind of information and have some kind of overview, just practical experience. And I would spend much more time in that direction, because then at least once you have a composer that basically knows what he or she wants and knows what the situation is, well then perhaps you know, that person can use the technology in hopefully a freer way, a more creative way. I've been fairly lucky, and in fact I've got from technology what I want. That's one way of saying it. Or you can say that I can't consider composition apart from technology now. So perhaps that means that I feel maybe a greater responsibility for somehow reflecting on the situation and writing about it and talking about it.
What I'm perceiving from you is the most significant contribution of technology to music right now is the fact that it's change the process of composition, and no matter whatever happens to it, mm-hmm. that in itself is probably important, even if there was no more technology or no further development.
Well, if music caught up with the capability of present-day technology, which it certainly is far from doing, we certainly would be in a very, very different situation from the musical point of view. We're not using nearly the potential that technology has, because that potential is blocked by a lot of economic and administrative blocks, and the technological barrier just of the machine itself, and the fact that it's really designed for business and not for arts, and then the problem that composers have of approaching it. So what do we conclude from that, you know, as in terms of the future? Is it going to be constantly a catching up procedure?
What is your own process from here on in?
I'm really just understanding the process of what has happened just in the last year. I find it very hard to lay a course for the future. Now that may sound rather odd in a way, but because these things do change so rapidly, I find that it's better not to. In fact, I'll put it this way, I don't get disturbed if I don't have a very, very direct course. I would rather understand what is happening, what has happened, and then on that basis be able to cope with, hopefully, or understand whatever change is going to be lying around the corner. Crystal ball gazing in this day and age is, particularly on the subject we're talking about, is very dangerous. I certainly see certain trends, not all of which will affect me, but I mean, the home market is the biggest trend right now.
But the human brain still strikes me as being ultimately more complex, but will the human brain ever catch up with the machine?
It's not really a matter of catching up. You see, part of the knowledge that we have is already implemented in the machine. In fact, the part that we really don't need to be concerned with ourselves, if it's done well. That is, there are certain fairly mechanical things and procedural things that it's just as well to have a machine do so that you don't have to be bothered with them. So if we have these two sources of knowledge, and part of it's in the machine and part of it's in my head, then it becomes very clear as to which one's which. That may sound trivial, but with many composers, I don't think they do realize what they share with other people and what is objective about their craft and what is supposedly individual. And I think basically society, because they glorify the individual in our society, we tend to err on the side of everything I do is unique and irreplaceable, and therefore we get notions that composition is unteachable and that composers are really very irrational and probably are born geniuses, if not eccentrics, and so on and so forth down the line. I would dearly like to see the end of that era and bring music back into the humanities, bring it back into the social sciences, and bring it back into the realm of an art that is another form of complex human behavior that is understandable, that you can experiment with. Music theory could be a totally experimental science with the technology we have now. You can test musical behavior now. We could actually test musical behavior and find out what links the performer, the composer, the listener. There's a tremendous potential there of using the technology to elucidate the musical process and also to further it. So I find that it's more a case of our understanding catching up than the machine brain sort of competing with each other. I find that can be a very useful reflection of each other. That now that we know certain things are programmable and that our representable in machine form, then that makes it much clearer as to what is uniquely human or what is personal and individual and what is shared. And I feel much happier once that is clarified and not exploited into a sort of personality cult.
Barry, I've asked you in our association many, many times about your own background, but here is the opportunity to say briefly, give us your own background again, because it's for a totally different purpose.
I have both a background in music and in science. Like many high school students in the early 60s, and who were male and white and reasonably good in science and math, I was very excited by a career in science. And so when I went to Queen's University in 1965, I studied physics and mathematics and actually managed to do that for 4 years and actually graduate. But by that time, I realized that my interests, which were largely in the arts, were simply going to have to be given a little more consideration, because I had all this marvelous scientific training and my music background, which extends back as far as I can remember. I come from a musical family, but they had always encouraged me to keep music as a nice hobby or avocation, since it is not your surest bet for earning a living. That was good advice, but then by the end of my undergraduate training at Queen's, I realized that I needed a sense of creative kind of fulfillment, and that wasn't happening in science, and it was beginning to happen in a very exciting, primitive way with music and with the piano, which I've always played. And so I decided to devote a couple of years of my life anyway to try it out and see what would happen. And after a lot of looking around, I went to UBC and became part of the Master of Music program there. Immediately went into the electronic music studio, and you might say never came out. It was a first love and a very quick love, and I felt very much at home with the tape medium and electronic sounds. And from there on, there was no looking back.
Well, you mentioned a period of the 60s. It was quite normal for young students to be interested in careers in mathematics.
And, well, science in general. This is 2 years after the launching of the Sputnik, the first really exciting space efforts. And there was a tremendous push because the United States felt that it was behind in technology. And so there was a tremendous push, which, when combined with the baby boom, produced an enormous number of people that were going into these kinds of fields.
Would you say, though, that that particular period was responsible for the fast proliferation of musical, technological people?
Well, of course, it is a spin-off of it. Perhaps I'm even typical of this rather untypical use of technology in music, is that there was such a push towards science that people acquired that kind of knowledge, but didn't necessarily cut themselves off from other areas, because you do have to apply this knowledge in some way. And since technology was beginning to be applied very heavily towards music, then this possibility is there. And combined with a certain trend towards interdisciplinary thinking that was beginning to gain some acceptance in the late 60s, well, then you do have this possibility of jumping from one field to the other. Whereas I think 10 years before that, in the 50s, it would be, in this continent, rather odd.
Can you describe your particular evolution once you got into that electronic studio? And
well, very briefly. First of all, I was very fascinated by the tape medium and electronic sounds, but I made no connection with science or computers at that point. In fact, I was running away from them, and I had done a little bit of computer programming. One was just expected to pick it up as a matter of course. But when I began in electronic music, then I wasn't thinking of consciously making a bridge between the two. I really was making a very clear separation and was saying, okay, now I'm going to study music, and before I was studying science. But as things have gone on, the more I've gotten away from science, the more I've gotten back into it and have used it for these particular purposes. Well, anyway, compositionally, there is only so far that one, I feel, can go in the voltage control electronic music studio. And that limit quickly became apparent to me when I went to Utrecht, to the Institute of Sonology, which is a very sophisticated studio for electronic music. And at that time had just acquired a computer. This is 1971. And they were starting to develop computer resources. So I was still composing exclusively with electronic sources and live sound. But I was also became interested again in developing the computer resource because simply was there. I was very skeptical about it. This is something that may be difficult for people who have not been trained in science to understand, but that kind of training often makes you more skeptical or circumspect about science, because in a way you might say you know too much about it. You know that it is not magic, that it is not doesn't have all the answers, and that there are certain limitations, and it's a particular way of looking at the world that's very powerful, but it is not everything. And so as a result, I was very skeptical of what one could do with computers. I hadn't heard any computer music that was the slightest interest to me. One of the first indications that there really was something very powerful there was when I went to Stockholm and the magnificent electronic music studio there and met Knud Wiggen. I spent an afternoon there with him, and he played me a composition of his done in the studio. And it was extremely beautiful, first of all. It was musically very, very powerful and also very subtle, as most of his work is. And he said to me that you need the kind of power and resource that the computer provides for the ideas that are being developed in contemporary music. And I was just completely stunned by it, because I saw that, yes, in fact, you did. And that instead of simply the computer being a device that you only got out of what you put into it, I saw that, in fact, it was an organizational tool, and that connected with what I was discovering in the electronic music studio, was that, yes, you can produce a lot of sound, but when it comes to organization, in other words, when the composer starts becoming concerned about structure, somehow controlling larger form, controlling processes, the most critical part of compositional thinking is controlling large-scale relationships. And that's where the electronic music studio for me breaks down, and I think it does for many composers. There usually is a great influence that composers have when they're first exposed to the way of thinking that is necessary in electronics. This acoustical way of thinking, this systematic way of connecting one device to another and describing waveforms, this kind of the physics of it and the kind of logic of it, I think influences a composer tremendously, because you've, in terms of traditional music training, you've never been exposed to, first of all, acoustic notions or psychoacoustic notions. You've never been able to compose the sound. You've only been writing notes. So this has a tremendous impact on composers, this way of working with the medium. But then if you continue, okay, they might say there's a dividing point. You are probably tremendously influenced at the beginning, and then there will come some kind of fork in the road or whatever, where you'll have to make a choice whether, okay, you've had that influence and now you're going to go back to whatever field, instrumental writing or whatever you think is relevant, or are you going to go on being mainly centered in the electronic idiom. Well, if you do, well then, you usually either go to more towards a performance-oriented situation, such as live electronics, or I think you tend to go towards the computer as a non-real-time way of organizing composition that is very powerful. And that's essentially what I did.